Buddha, Sivadharma, Dharma, Siddha Sangha. So this talk is on the meaning and use of rosaries. And I'll say first something about the history of the rosary, which I knew nothing about, so we looked this information up, a little help. And I had been speculating, maybe rosaries originated in India, possibly with Buddhism. I just wondered about that, because being born in the United States, my exposure to the rosary was only references to it in the Catholic faith. But it seems that it actually did originate in India, and that it traveled during the Roman times to the Mediterranean. And that these so-called prayer beads in Sanskrit, the name is mala or japamala, and the Romans, due to a kind of etymological resemblance, their word for rose was jap, so it became rosary. I guess in their subsequent translation, you know, that's where it comes from. So I didn't know that, and that's really, really interesting. My suspicions were confirmed. It does originate in India, possibly with Buddhism. The traditional, most ancient size of the rosary is apparently 108 beads, and our large rosary, our largest rosary is a 108 bead rosary. The 108 beads are basically for 108 forms of delusion. And that breaks down in a certain analysis that I won't go into because it's not needed. So presumably one would meditate on each of the beads. One would hold one of the beads originally and maybe meditate on a particular form of delusion. I don't think many people nowadays are inclined to go into things in that kind of analytical detail. That in ancient India, Buddhism was very analytical. Not necessarily in the time of the Buddha himself, but you know, it was in the dominant religion, a dominant religion in India for many centuries. And so I'm going to talk in a few minutes about some more simple meditational uses of the rosary. But a few things about the form of the rosary. Traditionally, the beads can be a wood, they can be a seed, they can be bone, they can be stone, and the rosaries that we offer are wood and gemstone rosaries. The beads are in groups. The main beads of a rosary are in groups. There's in the 108 and 54 bead rosaries, 54 you note is a half of 108, the beads come in groups of 9. The main beads come in groups of 9. The groups are divided from one another by a divider bead, you could call it. And the divider bead will typically be a different material and or a different size from the main beads. In the 27 bead rosary, the grouping is a little different for reasons I have no idea of what they would be. I think the 27 bead rosary may be a little peculiar to Zen or to Soto Zen. But you note that that's 1/4 of 108. And the 27 bead rosary, the group 6, 6, and 15. adding up to 27. Again, with little divider beads. Then there's a pendant on the rosary that takes various forms. Usually there's three beads representing the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha on the pendant. And then there's usually something more. And it can be, as in our case, tassels, a pair of tassels. It could be a single tassel. It can be a manji, which is the swastika shape, representing the turning of the wheel of the law in Buddhism. The turning of the wheel of the Dharma. Movement in a positive direction in one's spiritual life. It can be a fish. I don't remember right of hand what the fish represents. It can be other things. What River Master Jiyu said about it was that it always represents movement in the direction of positivity, the movement of training, one form or another. A word about the tassels. Master Jiyu explained the tassels as being like the roots of the lotus plant, and the roots go into the mud. And if you try to pull the roots of the plant out of the mud, you kill the plant, and it can never flower. And she used to refer to that mud as the mud of greed, hate, and delusion. And that the point is not to pull the roots out of the mud in training. The point is to convert or transform greed, hate, and delusion into compassion, love, and wisdom in training. Another way to put that is that Buddhism begins with the positive acceptance of our humanity and working with our human frailties and human limitations rather than trying to destroy them. Buddhism is not about destroying anything. It's about spiritual transformation. Because that's what works. You try to kill part of yourself and you just drive it wild and inflame the problem and add another level of problem, another layer of problems onto the existing one. So it's having compassion for one's humanity and the humanity of others, and then doing the best one can in training to transform greed, hate, and delusion. And they do transform as one works on it into compassion, love, and wisdom. So I want to talk now about a few of the ways in which a rosary is used. And the first thing I want to say is that in one way or another, one is going to make best use of a rosary if one has some grounding in some experience of some form of meditation. And that will be clear as I talk why this is the case. With grounding in meditation, then the rosary can be used as an adjunct to that meditation to assist in certain situations, especially to keep the meditative attitude of mind and heart. This word adjunct is something, I don't know if I ever use it in my life or heard it very much until River Master used it. And what River Master Jiyu said about a number of aspects of our practice is that they are adjuncts to meditation. And by this she meant, and I actually looked the word up in the dictionary, and she was very careful in her use of words, by this she meant that these aspects of our practice that are adjuncts should not be regarded as absolutely necessary, but rather as helpful when it is good to use them, the right time, the right circumstances. Something that is adjunct is something that goes along with something else in support of it, but that is not absolutely necessary. And the rosary needs to be understood in this way, as do many other things and many other formal aspects of training. After all, pure meditation requires only, strictly speaking, pure meditation requires only a resolve to turn within and be still and let go of external things and look up. And many things are helpful to doing pure meditation. Sitting on a meditation cushion, you know, doing formal meditation. Sitting on a chair, doing formal meditation. Kneeling on a bench. All of these ways of meditating, all these tools that support these ways of meditating are really adjuncts to the real spiritual work. And as adjuncts, they can be enormously helpful. So the rosary is an adjunct. Helpful and not absolutely necessary. Some people will find it more helpful than others. Due to, you know, their peculiar disposition. So let's talk about a few of the ways that a rosary can be used. The first way is simply to have it on one's person or wear a rosary on one's wrist. And to allow just that wearing of it and the fact that one always treats it with a special respect to remind one throughout the day of one's spiritual purpose and one's intent to keep a meditative, an open-hearted attitude of mind. So some people carry a rosary in their pocket and now and then stick a hand in a pocket and just hold it, especially if things start to get difficult. You know, say you're at a meeting at work or something and you're getting ragged or something, or you're starting to get your nerves are getting frayed, then you grab your rosary and hold on a bit. And that's a very good use of a rosary, and one that many people use it for. Or one can wear it, a really, you know, a nice and conspicuous one on the wrist, and to most people it looks like another little simple bracelet. To you, it has a special meaning, and the fact that it's, you know, on your wrist now and then, you look down at it. Oh yes. In the midst of this present situation, I have a spiritual purpose. There are other simple uses. One of them is simply to hold the rosary in one hand. It might be in the open, it might be concealed. Say you're riding a bus to work or something, you've got a rosary in your hand, and maybe you're reciting the three refuges, homage to the Buddha, or I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. The three homages, homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. And you're working your way around the rosary, doing the three homages or the three refuges. Note that all the beads in a rosary, the main beads, are in groups of three, multiples of three. 9 on the bigger rosaries, 6, 6, and 15 on the smaller rosary, 27-bead rosary. So you can work your way around doing the three treasures. So what do you do? When you get to those divider beads, then you hold it. Just sit still for a minute. Just a moment of silent, just pure meditation. Then you carry on. Some people like to use it in that way. Sometimes people will add in, say, the three pure precepts. Cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. Now they have two groups of three. Then again, when you get to the divider bead, you just hold it. On the three beads in the pendant, you go, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha, or homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Those are the three treasures beads. I've just kind of thought of a couple of things about the meaning that I just think I'll throw in here that I find really neat. On the rosaries we make, the beads are joined together above the pendant by a little knot of eternity. In the West, it's called a little Celtic knot, but in Buddhism, it's called the knot of eternity. And this has a very particular meaning in Buddhism. Rinmaster Jiyu loved the knot of eternity and explained it as being the kind of the filters, this kind of spiritual filter through which the greed, hate, and delusion got passed in training, and so that just clean water flowed through in the end. Clean water of compassion and wisdom flowed through. Came out the end of the filter. Now, knot of eternity, you see eternity. There's a saying that I love from one of the ancient Buddhist masters. Enlightened people cleanse their hearts with stillness. Think of eternity as the eternal meditation of the Buddha nature that we join into when we do what we call meditation. When we really let go, look up, be still, take refuge in our own heart, we join in the eternal meditation of the Buddha nature. And in that place, all that which is pained and confused is consoled and given peace. And all that that is warped, spiritually warped, and jangled, is straightened out and harmonized with the infinite love and wisdom of our true nature. And that all happens within the context of that stillness, not as a result of our active will, but just as a result of our willingness to join in the eternal meditation of the Buddha nature. Enlightened people cleanse their hearts with stillness. At that moment, whenever that happens with any of us, there is an enlightened person, although we will usually not be conscious of it. And the next moment, if we trip up and do something foolish, well, there's not such an enlightened person. The pendant hangs from the knot of eternity. And after holding the pendant, one can, fingering the three beads or holding the three beads of the pendant, one can hold the tassel. One can also do a pause on that knot of eternity itself, hold that, do another quiet meditation. One can hold the tassel. In addition to the roots of the lotus, that tassel can also, we use a double tassel. The double tassel can also be taken to be the two aspects of the fountain of the water of the spirit, or the water of compassion and wisdom, great compassion, great wisdom, maha karuna, and maha prajna. Because, you know, the shape of the tassel is like a kind of like a fountain shape. The two aspects of the spiritual fountain can also be taken as the two aspects of the all is one and the all is different. The all is one within the Buddha nature. All things possess the Buddha nature. And the all is different. Even though all beings, all existence possesses the Buddha nature, we're still all different from one another, and each person makes his or her own karma and carries the consequences. We see, and takes the consequences. All is one and all is different. So one can work one's way around the rosary in these meditative ways. And it can be more complex. You could do the 12 steps of dependent origination around the rosary. It's a groups of, you know, 12 is a multiple of 3 as well, so that works pretty well. There's lots of Buddhist teachings that come in groups of 3 or multiples of 3. I have to say that I think for most people, as you get more and more complex in these ways, the interest diminishes in proportion to the level of complexity. Because really, the rosary is more, for most people, it has a more, pragmatic and meditative and devotional aspect. And the more complex it gets in terms of doctrinal use and like, it's kind of the more intellectual it tends to get. And so for most people, the kind of greater levels of complexity are not that interesting, and my suggestion is really that if people are going to use the rosary in the more complex ways, that they really be sure that they're training under the guidance of a teacher. Because directed meditations can have their problematical aspects. And one wants to be sure that one's doing it in a way that is doing, actually being a benefit for oneself and not causing problems. There's also the use of the rosary as a way of transferring merit. And any of the ways I've talked about can be done. And then, say when you get to that divider bead where you just sit still, you offer the merit for someone who is ill, someone who has died, someone who is suffering. And I would say here what I always say about offering merit. It's good to offer merit when it's good to offer merit. It's not, generally speaking, good to offer merit just flat out all the time in a state of well-intentioned or good-intentioned confusion. I've told this story on myself before, but many years ago I said to River Master, I want to offer all my merit for so-and-so or such-and-such. And River Master said, no, don't do that. You need some of that merit for you. Keep some for you. You know, it's important we remember, we're not God. We're not Kanzian. And that we train for self and other. So it's good to offer merit when it's good to offer merit. And it's important not to just be unreflectively, willfully overdoing it on the offering of merit. In other words, we're always responsible for listening to our own heart, for trusting our own inner voice, our own inner spiritual instinct as to what's truly good to do at the present time. Now, one way in which people who use the rosary will often talk about it is that in times of particular difficulty, in times of particular stress, in times of extra pain, they will find the rosary especially comforting. And there are, of course, many other aspects of training that people find to provide that kind of comfort. I have to say, not many of them are as portable as a rosary. You know, you can't take the whole temple with you, the physical temple with you, when you go out into the world. But you can take a little reminder, you see. So the rosary is really nice that way. And there are other things that one can use. Some people wear a little, you know, pin with a little Buddhist emblem on it. Of course, the Waghesa, or the small Kesa for lay people, is exactly that. A relatively inconspicuous little reminder of the precepts and of the purpose of training, of the spiritual life, taking the spiritual life with one into the world. We train, we live in the world as if in the sky. Just as the lotus is not wetted by the water that surrounds it. I don't use a rosary myself, or haven't for many years, although I have some wonderful, beautiful rosaries. You might say I've internalized a lot of the process. I think that if I were to use, I'm pretty certain if I were to use the rosary, that the way I would use it would be mostly devotional in its emphasis. You can't make a strict demarcation between what is meditational and what is devotional. But for me, there is, in my daily life, just going about doing the things that I do in the temple or in the world, if I'm out in the world. You know, I sometimes have those, you know, little moments that in which I feel my heart's kind of crying out for help, or my heart's overflowing with gratitude and love for the eternal. These little moments that make you cry out for help, and these little moments that make you dance. And a rosary can be used in a devotional way you might say to kind of keep your grounding in those moments, in both those moments. The rosary is often identified with the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, or Kanzian. For many, many people in Buddhism, a Bodhisattva representing unconditional love, unconditional compassion. And, you know, just kind of holding a bead, saying, you know, homage to Kanzian Bodhisattva. You know, holding another bead, you know, thank you. You know, holding a bead, please help me. Holding a bead, thank you. Holding a bead, I love you. You can do it holding a bead, you can just have it, just do it in your own mind and heart. Whatever helps. For some people, the emphasis will be more on the meditation side of things, less on the devotional side of things. There's really not the distinction. There isn't any real line between the two. In all cases, whatever is arising, keeping our spiritual grounding, keeping grounded in the stillness, in the upward looking attitude of mind and heart, keeping grounded in the simplicity of true faith, keeping grounded in the stillness of meditation. I'd say, like Reverend Master used to say, if that helps, go for it. She used to say, the truth, the whole truth, and anything else that works. I think a rosary, like so many other the formal aspects of training, is something to really love and cherish. And always treat with reverence. There's no magic in it. It's the use that we put it to. It's the use we put it to that gives it its, makes it its important, helpful adjunct in training. It's not magic. Just kind of doing the incantations on a rosary isn't going to accomplish anything without the attitude of mind and heart. A religion is not magic. And a rosary is a religious tool. One of many tools in the toolbox of religion. The Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha.